Hi, everyone. It's Judy Warner. Welcome back to this week's On Track podcast. I have a special guest for you today, who is Mike Buteau of Printed Circuit Design and Fab Magazine and also of Circuit Assemblies Magazine. These magazines, Mike's the chief editor of both these publications and has been around the industry for more years than I'm sure he cares to remember. He's also not only been an exceptional journalist and a thought leader in the space, but he's also been a leader at IPC. And also his organization, UP Media, puts on PCB West and East here in the United States. So we're going to talk to him about trends in the industry for 2021 and sort of give you a state of the industry and things to look out for so you will be a better design engineer and get a good sense of where we're going in these crazy times. So lean in, enjoy. I'll see you on the other side. Welcome to Altium's On Track podcast, where we talk to leaders about PCB design, tackling subjects ranging from schematic capture all the way to the manufacturing floor. I'm your host, Judy Warner. Please listen in every week and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast apps. And be sure to check out the show notes at altium.com/podcast, where you can find great resources and multiple ways to connect with us on social media. Well, hi, Mike. Thanks so much for joining. We haven't done a podcast like this since last March. A lot has happened.
You think? I was just enjoying your intro. I mean, you just keep going. I'm just going to sit back and let you talk.
I'm going to just say, and he walks on water and he heals the sick. And yeah, well, thank you. You know, I do have a lot of regard for who you are as a journalist. And when I want to know what's going on, I typically go after what you're writing, because not only do you look at North America, but you also do your homework and help me to understand sort of what's going on globally. So I thought that was really relevant as we go into 2021 and say, man, what's happening?
Well, context is always important, right? I mean, somebody can say, hey, you know, our sales were X last quarter. And without some kind of frame of reference, it's pretty meaningless. So
yeah,
exactly. You know, that's what we try to do, right? Is you know, all the journalists in this industry just try to provide context to what's going on.
Yeah, I do think that's important. So last March, I think I had you come on very early when I started recording podcasts at home to talk about, oh my gosh, there's a global pandemic, what's going to happen? And it got so many either views or listens, because everybody was like, holy cow, you know, we were really upended. And so I thought I'd have you back again, not quite a year later, but to look at, okay, now what? You know, we survived the mess of 2020 in the industry. We really lost events. We've all become, you know, Zoom and, you know, online meeting experts. You know, our industry's really changed. And so as you kind of look back, how do you sort of tie that up in a package and say, this is what happened, so we do have that context sort of where we're going from here?
Well, you know, I just got done with a bunch of parent-teacher conferences with my high school freshmen. And, you know, one of the things that came up again and again was how resilient this generation of children is going to be, because they had to endure a year of, you know, most kids were working in some kind of remote or hybrid model and had to figure out a lot of things on their own, you know, were divorced from their, you know, their friends and, you know, separated from all the activities that they are used to. I think the industry is no different in that regard. I think that, you know, we have gone through a lot. You know, there's a lot of processes that probably have improved, and some of the things that were put into place over the past year will probably linger for quite a while, especially in terms of factory flow, you know, trying to get cut down on bottlenecks, like the human bottlenecks, you know, that happen particularly in fab shops, which tend to be, you know, fairly tight. I think that we will see, you know, more people working remote for, you know, for a good amount of time, not just sales folks, but, you know, some other engineers. I think some things are going to linger. You know, that said, I think we are on the cusp of a major disruption that has nothing to do with the pandemic. And, you know, I'd like to talk about that a little bit as we go on.
Yeah, we definitely will get there. Well, One thing I think, Mike, I know you and I personally have missed, but I think the industry at large has missed, is things like PCB West being an in-person event, right? And I think we've lost something with those face-to-face meetings. You know, what are observations you sort of have around that space since you did have to go virtual on PCB West that's normally right in the middle of Silicon Valley every year? What were your observations coming out of that?
You know, I've attended a lot of virtual shows over the past several months. I'm sure you have as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all the same. They're all different in terms of like platforms are different, technologies are different, the ease of use are different, things like that. But they're all the same in that they're all just kind of different degrees of kind of crap, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Just not there yet. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have these conversations via Zoom with, you know, with designers on the board as you are for the PCEA. And, you know, one thing that we always talk about is how we can't wait to get back face to face. Right. Because there's just so many more things that you can accomplish when you're actually in front of people. You know, you can see equipment, you can see software, you can touch it, you can make it work. You can, you know, that's just on the equipment side, right? You can walk through factories and really get a sense of, you know, how things are actually, are they humming or not? You can do a better job of capturing somebody's attention, you know, when they don't have, you know, six other screens open up and, you know, who knows how many emails popping up, you know, that they're kind of got their eye looking over here.
Yeah.
All that stuff goes away, right? When you can be face to face with somebody, you can sit down and have a drink with them or whatever, and just talk about casual things that it's feels a little bit forced. I mean, if you and I were to sit here and talk about our kids for 45 minutes, you know, via Zoom, it just wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, so, it wouldn't be the same.
But those
I
are the
agree
connections
with you.
That get made, right? That enable you to then develop the relationships that you need to really extract knowledge. Okay. You know, beyond just a cursory, well, I think you could do this and then running off to the next thing. I mean, when you really need to call up a Rick Hartley or Susie Webb and Lee Ritchie and pick their brain, you know, having been able to sit down with them, you know, in a big comfy chair, you know, in the lounge at a trade show, you know, and shoot the breeze for 45 minutes an hour enables you to take that next step. There's no other way to get around that, in my opinion. I think people are dying to get back to that.
I agree with you. And you just reminded me that one of my favorite conversations with Lee Ritchie was at Altium Live maybe 2 years ago. And, you know, we had talked many times, as you have talked many times with the guy over the year, but we were sitting there with a glass of red wine in comfy chairs in the lobby of a hotel. And we just had a very human discussion, which led to a lot of other work-related things that were quite magical. And mm-hmm. I'll actually share one of the things that led to is, well, you just need to sort of tell your story. And so we ended up filming that and just sort of, and he's like, this is so great. Now my kids will know what I've been doing all these years. But he showed, you know, a circuit board, you know, a model of a circuit board that's still on the moon, you know. And so it's these human things that end up yielding not only technical, you know, great things professionally, right? And then we ended up teeing up some teaching opportunities. And I'm positive, you know, Rick Hartley and the things he's doing with you with PCB Today, which we'll put in the show notes also, great series. You know, I'm sure those happened, you know, maybe in the lobby of the, is it the Hilton or the Hyatt in Santa Clara?
In the Hyatt. Yeah.
Hyatt. Because we've all like worn out the furniture in that place. And so there really is a human element that's intangible that cannot be replicated with Zoom. And so to that end, you are the brave one and you've got a PCB West and East on the calendar. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Thanks. So first up is PCB East. So we're coming back to Boston in June. We haven't been out East in several years. We've kind of concentrated on the West Coast show, but we decided to bring back the East Coast one. We had, you know, plenty of people sort of knocking on us saying, when are you going to come back East? So June 15th to 17th in Marlboro, Massachusetts, we are going to have a 3-day technical conference, 55 hours of training, you know, 1-day exhibition. You know, Lee Ritchie, who we mentioned, will have a couple of tutorials, one on PCB stack up design and another one on power delivery systems design. We'll have 2 full days of Rick Hartley. You know, he'll have a brand new talk titled PC Board Design for Optimum Fabrication and Assembly.
Wow.
And I think this one's going to be pretty interesting. Happy Holden, who, you know, I believe has been at Altium Live in the past as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's presented at PCB West more than a few times. And he explains how fabricators determine pricing for bare boards. And, you know, you'll remember this from, you know, from your previous, you know, before you came to Altium. So Happy has something called the fab and assembly report cards, which is how manufacturers assess and weight the variables that drive cost. And so, for instance, you know, as you know, board size is a major cost driver. But as Rick explains, what most designers don't know is that the aspect ratio of length to width also has a major impact. So you could have two boards with the same number of layers and the same number of square inches, but a difference in their respective aspect ratios, you know, say one is much longer than it is wide, okay? Mm-hmm. That will push up the bare board cost. Mm-hmm. And same with assembly, which has even more cost drivers than does fab.
Right.
So what Rick is gonna do is discuss these major cost drivers. And you know, he actually, you know, it's funny because I was talking to him about this and he brought up a conversation that he had at Altium Live. He said he had, you know, some discussions during the chat sessions with some of the bare board fabricators there. And one of them said, I'm going to paraphrase here because, you know, I can't tell mm-hmm. a story like Rick, but at any point in time, as many as 90% of our jobs, 90% are on hold, mm-hmm. waiting for correction or clarity from the customer so we can proceed. And in Rick's opinion, what's happening is that designers are completely flying blind when it comes to all these cost drivers and what suppliers need at both the bare board and assembly levels, which is why there's so many delayed boards. So what he wants to do is highlight and talk about these factors that really drive the board side, the aspect ratio, layer count, Z-axis uniformity, copper balance, you name it. So we're looking forward to that new talk.
That painful place right there, Mike, is the whole reason for this podcast, is to bring people like Rick and Lee and you to help fill that gap. Cause there's always been some of that gap there, but now that EEs are coming out of university with absolutely no context, they're being dropped in the deepest end of the technology ocean and they don't have time to onboard this. But if we can deliver it to them, it, places like PCB West, I think it's so impactful. You know, sometimes you don't know what you don't know until you hear a Lee Ritchie or a Rick Hartley talk about it. And it's like the light bulb goes on and they're like, oh my goodness, this makes sense. And how much pain and money and time that's going to take away. So that's very exciting.
I like how you put that, the technology ocean, right? And, you know, I want to pick up on something else that you mentioned. You talked about the EEs. Well, so Susie Webb at PCB East will be rolling out a new 2-day tutorial for design engineers. Her class is going to do an overview of the entire process of board design, start to finish, specifically addressing the EE design, the electrical engineer who's designing their own board, or a new designer who needs to thoroughly understand everything that's involved. So she's going to go over the electronics and physics involved, how the rise time and controlling the energy fields will impact signals on the board. She'll talk about choosing parts types, schematics and signal and constraint issues, mechanical issues, you name it. So all that, you know, in June in Marlborough, Massachusetts, PCBEast.com.
Okay, before you talk about West, why are you so brave to have an in-person event? Like what indicators are you looking at that makes you feel pretty confident that our world will be opened up at that time? Or what's your thinking there, Mike?
You know, a little bit of data, a little bit of trust, a little bit of hope, probably a lot of hope. In Massachusetts, you know, the rollout of the vaccine is going very well. We have I'm due to get it sometime in February. I mean, you know, just, you know, average Joe me. So, you know, by middle April, it's expected that, you know, most of the adults in the state, you know, will be vaccinated. We wanted to make sure that we had, some time, you know, on the back end in case that gets delayed, because it very well could be. But, you know, we felt by mid-June, you know, we have a good shot at actually being able to go back in person. I'm a little bit less up to date on what's happening with the vaccine rollout in California. Obviously, it's a much bigger area with a lot more people.
Yeah.
But, you know, that show is not scheduled to take place until the PCB West isn't going to take place till the end of August, early September. So, again, you know, there's a little bit of faith involved, but the way that events are, you have to plan them out, you know, well in advance. And
yes,
then
you do.
You know, kind of take your shot.
And I'm going to ask you a little bit of a loaded question. Are you concerned about people flying in from other areas? And I know it's a little bit like reading tea leaves, but any thoughts around that?
Sure. So that was actually part of the strategy, right? Is that we expected that people may be more comfortable getting in their own cars and being able to stay somewhat local than having to get on a plane. You know, we'll get back to that, right? You know, the country really didn't want to get back on a plane for a while back in 2001 after 9/11, you know, but we went back. You know, we'll get there. But as you know, and as we'll talk about a little bit later, the technology keeps rolling along. The new program starts keep rolling along. Businesses keep working. So you have to keep supplying them the tools, the information, the access to, you know, new software, new equipment, you know, that they need to make their decisions. And again, you can only do so much of that remotely, you know.
Yeah.
So once people start getting vaccinated, I think that they will feel comfortable at least getting in their car and driving to a local, conference center and, you know, where they can, you know, walk the show floor, they can wear their mask if that helps. And then they can hop back in their car and go home, you know, to their family at night.
That makes perfect sense. So tell us what you've got going on for West, the dates, the location, and what people can expect to see there.
Yeah, so PCB West, you know, we're still recruiting speakers, if you know anybody. That's taking place right at the end of August and the first couple of days of September at the Santa Clara Convention Center. We've been there for years. We are, we know that, they're still undergoing some cleaning and things like that, but we figure, you know, they've got several months still. They're going to get it all done. We're not even going to be the first people back in the doors there. So hopefully, you know, they'll have all their staff up and everybody kind of, you know, back to business as normal by then. We think it's going to be a really good show. I mean, you know, it'll probably be the first major design, you know, PCB design exhibition, you know, that takes place, you know, after COVID has sort of, you know, waned. We fully expect it'll be heading back to, you know, the pre-COVID type of environment by then.
How many years are you celebrating now of PCB West East?
Yeah, so we're right up on 30. You know, it's
my
crazy,
goodness.
Right? You know, our owner started it back in 1991, and it's just staggering, you know, how long and successful it's been. You know, as we remember, NEPCON was the really big show way back
then. I do.
NEPCON West doesn't exist anymore. I mean, you know, they had NEPCON East. There was a component show called WestCon. I mean, all these things have gone away. SemiCon used to be, both in Santa Clara or San Jose and San Francisco, you know, simultaneously. Now it's all, you know, consolidated into San Francisco. I mean, all these things have changed, you know, dramatically in some respects over the years. And PCB West just keeps chugging along because, you know, there's more designers in the field now than ever, if you can believe it. There's more design starts happening each year. It's growing. It's absolutely growing.
It's amazing. Well, you know, personally, it feels like home sweet home, and I can't wait to go drink from the fire hose and sit in that lobby with all our old friends and, you know, have those conversations again. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I'll make sure for our listeners, I'm going to put these links below. And depending on where you are, hope you will join Mike and hopefully me in these, because I'm biting at the bit, man. I need to get out of here. So, and I miss all my dear, dear friends. And I feel like something's really lost. So best of luck with you to the show. Okay, now we're going to dig in to all that great journalism and research you do that we all benefit from. I thought it'd be great right here to talk about sort of three major indicators that you're tracking in the industry. One being the potential or the looming component shortage issues, what's driving that, you know, what the sort of forecast is as we look ahead. The other is a really interesting topic that you and I discussed briefly, which is smart manufacturing and where we're headed that way. And the other one is the geopolitical landscape that's been a wild ride this year. And, you know, we have a different U.S. administration here driving the train. So this is a lot. So let's just jump right in and start talking about components. I'm hearing more and more like that we're back where we were maybe 2 years ago, where shortages are looming. So I know you do a lot of research. Tell us about what you're seeing and the outlook that you see for 2021.
Right, right. So we'll give listeners what they came for here. Yep. So do you know what switch mode power supply and metal axial capacitors have in common? Any guess?
Oh, no.
They are the only chip caps, the only chip cap styles with falling lead times right now.
Oh, well, so, there you go.
So if you look at, you know, TTI, which is a distributor, has a, you know, their market eye, and they will actually publish, you know, what their lead times are on all sorts of parts. They have 84 different segments of chip caps. Right now, 35 of the 84 have increasing lead times, and just those two that I mentioned are going down. And then if you look at resistors, same thing. There's 45 resistor types that they track. 33 are going up, only 3 going down. Now, to be fair, some of these aren't too different from when they were 6 months ago. But 6 months ago, the supply chains were digging out from COVID shutdowns. You know, now this is purely demand-based. And
what's driving that?
Yeah, automotive. Electric vehicles, absolutely. We've seen, you know, everybody knows about how well Tesla's done in the last year. And I think they just did their fourth quarter, and they said they shipped something like 180,000 cars, I think. So that's a run rate of, what, 720,000 cars for the year, you know, if you annualize that. They told Wall Street they expect they could hit 1 million this year. So if I take 28 divided by 72, that's like, what, 39%? I mean, you know, they're growing like crazy. And the number, I read this the other day, the number of chip caps in a gas combustion engine vehicle is something like 2,000. The number of capacitors in an electric vehicle, any guess? 19,000.
Oh, my gosh.
So you have 9.5 times the number of capacitors alone.
Oh, my goodness.
So they're hogging everything.
So they were the problem before. Why didn't we learn anything? Or did we just not see this kind of growth in the electric vehicle market happening in this year?
Right. So a couple things there. One is that the electrical vehicle market has grown faster than I think it was expected. I mean, Tesla is projecting 50% year over year over multiple years. You have way more companies involved in it now, right? Just from a couple of years ago. You know, since then, you know, GM has said they're converting everything to electric. You have Baidu has, which is a search engine, you know, got permission to do autonomous vehicles in California. They're going to do testing there. You have Didi, which is China's version of Lyft and Uber, which is developing an autonomous driving unit. EV maker Faraday Future. I mean, we've never heard of these companies, right? Faraday Future is getting into it. They're going public. Foxconn has teamed up with a EV maker in China. They've created this unit called Foxtron. You know, VW is going all in. I mean, this reminds me a little bit of the dot-com boom of the late 1990s, and it kind of pains me to say that. and just like then, you know, not all these guys are going to succeed.
Right.
But I think that there's no question that that's what's really pushing the component demand right now. And it's not just for passives, it's for memory too.
And it's global.
Absolutely.
Which is interesting to me. I mean, it's not a surprise, but it's interesting to hear this input from you. Again, for my listeners, I'm going to put everything Mike shares with me as far as like TTI's market watch and that thing in the show notes below. So if you want to go see sort of some of the sources he's pulling from, I think you'll find that interesting. So Say that I develop IoT devices and I'm a startup and I need caps and resistors. Any advice for me? Help.
Buy a component distributor. Look, you know, VW is complaining that all the Chinese telecoms have hogged all the parts. You know, like it's just the chip decisions, the decisions to add capacity are made outside of the normal buying cycles. So it's just really hard to play catch up in that regard. You know, they're looking, because these are $3 to $10 billion investments in new wafer, fabs. You know, they're looking really far down the road before allocating that money. And, you know, even like NAND and DRAM, the key memories, if you look at the demand to supply right now, it's pretty even, but the overall IC market's supposed to grow more than 10% this year. And it was up 8% last year with a GDP, a worldwide GDP that dropped 4.5%. So, I mean, you're going to be crunched. You can do what Apple does, which is to buy parts, on forecast 6 months in advance. You know, they outlay, tens of billions of dollars to do that. You know, very few companies can do that, right? So there's going to be a lot of building to forecast right now and, a lot of scrambling for parts. And let's just hope that it doesn't, turn into a double and triple ordering kind of situation that that we used to see years ago, and we sort of managed to avoid the last time there was a crunch.
Well, challenging times ahead, and like you said, it's not an easy thing. It's easy to sit here on the sidelines and go, "Well, just make more," but you don't understand. It's like turning the Titanic. It's a big thing to online all the wafer fabs and not overinvest and have that catch up. So anyways, interesting stuff. We're going to keep an eye on that one. The other thing you and I talked about, Mike, was that we're both actually really interested in is smart manufacturing. And you sort of have a global outlook on this. And there's been, how many years, Mike, have we been talking about Industry 4.0?
At least 10, right? in some form or another, okay? And Industry 4.0, right, was really just a derivative, another rebranding of, lights out manufacturing, which Jim Raby wrote the, kind of the prototypical argument in favor of it in a paper he did for the DOD, I don't know, 1990s, maybe even earlier. So this has been kicking around for a long, long time, data-driven, manufacturing, autonomous assembly, that kind of thing. We're closer to it than we have been, for sure. And, there's some companies that have actually implemented procedures and systems that are pretty exciting. And I'd be happy to share some of that with you.
Well, let's just start right there. For us in North America, I'll share this link below too. I did a really interesting interview with Jim Brown from GreenSource, and they've done it right here in North America, which is a really rare animal, but I really admire what they've done there. But you have an insight sort of across the globe, and what are some of the companies out there that you're seeing, doing a job, and what does that look like?
Right. Well, so can I share a screen with you?
You sure can. And for our listeners, I'll put a link or something below so you can look at it. For those of us that are viewing, go ahead, share it. Let's see it for the YouTube consumers.
So this is USI. USI is the 11th largest EMS company in the world. It's Universal Scientific Industrial, right? And so a year ago, this plant, this is in Shanghai, and this is really their state-of-the-art plant. Some people may know USI a little bit better because they just bought STL Flash.
Oh, they did. That's interesting. Did.
Yes, okay. That deal just closed. But USI, a year ago, if you looked at this factory, these are all robotic test cells. They're testing SIP modules. Every one of these would have been manned by an individual. There would have been hundreds of workers on this floor. You can look in here and see there's robotic arms that are controlling all the movement, right? So today, in the place of those hundreds of workers, you have, you know, scores of these test cells with robots moving the parts around and conducting the test. You have AGVs here on the floor that will move all the parts on trays from, you know, across, not just across this factory floor, but also throughout the facility. So it'll go up and down elevators. It'll move things back into storage. You have one operator here, you know, who uses a handheld, like a mobile device to, you know, maintain all of these machines. It's a remarkable transformation. Now, USI, of course, you know, I think I've got a couple other images. That's one of their, a lot of this is in Chinese, but this is a sample of their dashboard. You know, they're really tracking everything. This is one of their component storage bins. And so everything is stored here. They don't have warehouses and kitting. Everything is in here. They have software does the parts pull, and they have AGVs like these that transfer everything from those storage units to the assembly lines. And I'll get to the assembly
lines. Amazing.
You know, which are here. Okay, and you just see, this is all straight line. It's not easy to replicate this in high mix factories that are typical, you know, in the US.
Sure.
Which is why I think that the, you know, it's going to be a few, it's going to be a few years before we get there, maybe at least another five or more before it works its way into everyday factories. But for the high volume leading edge, it's there. And we've got to get used to that. You know, the days of, you know, filling your factory with lots of workers and lots of operators is something that is waning. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, Craig Davidson, who was the VP of technology at TTM until he just retired recently, but he said something to me years ago that, you know, I'll never forget. He said, never underestimate the tenacity of incumbent technology. And he's right. Okay. Which is why we've been talking about Industry 4.0 for 10 years, and we're going to be talking about it for another 10. It's going to take a long time before this works its way into the lower levels, but it will happen. It absolutely will happen.
I see it as well. And, however, like you said, the high mix, and I mean, you know, again, I come from feet on the ground inside of fabricators and EMS companies, and I know the complexity. It's in my veins. And I don't think that that's really understood how hard of a problem that is. And what do you see as, you know, sort of the, you know, what's in the way of us getting there?
Great question. So in my opinion, we have to speed up the design to manufacturing handoff. And if you go back years ago when you had the Dells and the, or not the Dells, but the digital equipments, the IBMs, the Hewlett Packards, who had everything from chip design to board fab to assembly all under, you know, one roof or on a single campus, they really had those systems down. Today, with everything is distributed, you know, you have, you know, one guy doing the chip design, you have a whole nother company doing the bare board design, you have a third company doing the fab and a fourth doing the assembly. It means that, you know, there's a lot of touches. And mm-hmm. what I think has to happen is that we have to automate a lot of these processes that currently take place. So, you know, right now we have the CAM engineers and operators spend God knows how many, you know, how much time doing repetitive, mindless, non-value-added administrative tasks.
You bet.
And that's despite all the improvements in software, machine automation, application interfaces, and so on. So, you know, we know, you know this from your experience, right? The norm in the plant is manual and often duplicate data entry.
Yeah.
And so thousands of keystrokes, thousands of mouse clicks, you know, as we move the design from quote to pre-CAM, planning methods and CAM. And then you have to do all those follow-on quality checks to make sure that all that manual data entry is correct. None of that is value added. So mm-hmm. we need to get to the point where the PCB data package that goes from the OEM to the fabricator is, I think, encapsulated in a single XML file. And that file would contain all the specific details that you need related to the manufacturer's requirements and specifications. So, you know, everything from the surface finish, the solder mask type and color, the nomenclature color, the product dimensions, and so on, you know, anything, you know, and then you got to really drill down to the, to what the fabricator's specific requirements are. Like, for example, you know, is that, you know, does that plate of via need a non-conductive fill? I mean, it really needs to encapsulate all that information. And then if you could do it right, those elements from that XML file would auto-populate all the product fields in the quote application. And that way the fab, all they would need to do is to perform a quick validation check, and they'd be able to generate a quote in minutes. And then if they actually won the order, all those same elements of the XML file would then auto-populate the pre-production engineering application. So, and the design data, this is where you come in, would be autonomously translated to the CAM application, where most, if not all, the pre-CAM preparation is done. And, you know, all the design rules analysis can be generated for review. So, I mean, all that would happen without manual intervention. And I think we can get there. But
it's a big problem.
A huge problem. There's no question. But we can't get there, in my opinion. We can't get to the that smart factory that we saw USI doing, you know, at a high volume, low mix level. We can't get that for a typical, you know, North American or European factory until we've captured, you know, all this data package stuff and solved that that design to manufacturing handoff. Once we get there, I think we'll be rolling.
And so from my perspective anyway, it's sort of a perfect storm because we have EEs laying out boards that don't have a lot of depth of knowledge of the fabricator's assemblies. And then conversely, you know, technology is changing so fast. The people that are actually manufacturing and putting these together don't always know the performance requirements or what altering some of these design features, the impact it may have on performance, particularly in the telecom field. And so you've kind of got this perfect storm in how to solve those problems. And, you know, it's one of the main reasons I'm excited to be at Altium because we're actually trying to tackle that. And that is a big, bodacious goal. But I like what I'm seeing so far and, you know, fingers and toes crossed. I like the way we're stepping into that with the release of Altium 365 and helping. But as a fabricator, I was shocked since I, you know, Mike, you know, I left the industry for, you know, a decade and came back and I'm like, where are the fab drawings? They were gonzo and EEs were laying out boards. And I'm like, the world's upside down. What happened? And when I was working at fabricators, they would just send over Gerber files or whatever, you know, files we needed for engineering and literally a README file with 90% of the stuff missing. I'm like, how are we supposed to make this? Well, we're going to have 64 calls and 94 emails and, you know, that's just not efficient. Doesn't work.
I couldn't agree more, right? I mean, you hear a lot of talk about AI and, you know, where it has its place in manufacturing. But in my opinion, you know, that's secondary to what we have to do, you know, about what's right in front of us right now. I mean, what we can do in the meantime is simply straighten out all these formats and processes that we use so we eliminate most, if not all, of the human element. Kent Bayless, who some of your listeners will probably know, Kent was at VIA Systems and then he was at TTM. And he just launched his own company at the end of last year, Epic Front-End Engineering. So he was senior director of automation. And so he had, you know, total corporate overview of all of their factories worldwide. And he's going to start writing about that for us this year. And I think he's going to, has a lot to offer in terms of how it goes beyond just, you know, the electronic data format, right? You've heard for years about, you know, one format or another, you know, I go back to the EDIF and IPC D350 days. And, you know, those were, you know, they didn't solve what we wanted them to solve. And then there was GenCam and ODB and now IPC 2581. And, you know, 2581 is a start, but there's still a lot of things that have to happen in order for this design to manufacturing handoff to truly be useful for the fabricator. So, and I think that Kent will help shed a lot of light on that, but I do think we can get there. It's just, we're going to have to truly focus on it.
When is Kent going to start writing the column?
Yeah, so that'll start with our March issue. And, you know, it's going to go on for quite a while because he has a lot of experience and a lot to say. And I think it's going to be, you know, different than just the typical rah-rah around a single, you know, data transfer format. I mean, Kent understands it goes way deeper than that. And there are, you know, both technical and financial reasons why companies have not implemented a lot of these standard formats to date. So he's going to get into that.
That's interesting. Well, for our listeners, if I didn't mention it before, I'm going to put the links also to Circuit Assemblies and also to the Printed Circuit Design Fab website where you can subscribe to those, the digital or the print versions. You guys are still printing, right?
We are.
And for old people like me, I like my print magazines. So I'll put the links to that so you can, you know, look out for really good content and also, you know, read this guy's great coverage of the industry. All right. The last things I wanted to touch on is probably the messiest, which is as we look ahead to 2021, the geopolitical outlook. What a hot mess. What's that going to do to us? Get out your crystal ball and tell me, you know, where we are and where you think we're going this year.
Yeah, I'm smiling, but I probably shouldn't be, right? I mean, you know, it's Taiwan, okay? I mean, Taiwan's the linchpin to everything in our industry right now. You know, we hear a lot about China because it's, you know, because of its marketplace and because that's where a lot of manufacturing is. But in fact, you know, it's Taiwan that has all the leading edge stuff. It's the home to the world's largest, everything, right? I mean, TSMC, which is a leading wafer packaging company. You've got 6 of the top 7 and 7 of the top 15 EMS ODM companies called Taiwan home. About 25% of the world's fabricators with sales of 100 million or more are based there. 5 of the 10 largest fabricators are based there. And that's a country of roughly 24 million people on an island that is slightly smaller than the combined area of Delaware and Maryland. And then you have China, you know, which even today was arguing arguing is probably being kind, asserting that Taiwan's Declaration of Independence is considered an act of war. I mean, there's a lot of saber rattling going on there. And of course, you know, the new administration is going to be tested. But I think that there are some real concerns as to what happens if there is a conflict above just shots across the bow. Okay. And, you know, the rest of the world, not just North America, but the rest of the world really has to look hard at their own internal supply chains and ensure that even if ample investment needs to be made, that they can do something to secure those. Because, you know, right now, if you want, you know, leading edge, chips, you can't get them in North America. You can't get them in Europe. You have to go to Korea or Taiwan. And, you know, if you have to cross an ocean for these things, then you've got inherent problems if a conflict were to break out.
Yeah. As you said, I've been, you know, watching this bit of, you know, China flying into Taiwan's airspace. You see a lot of drama happening across shipping lines. It's a little bit of a nerve-wracking time, but, you know, so I guess your response is kind of like, who knows? We got to just keep watching the news, right? Well, and just see how this unfolds. But I'm with you. Do you think the world will kind of come to bear to sort of protect Taiwan? I can't imagine that we all wouldn't sort of collectively to protect our own, you know, electronics supply lines.
Yeah, I'm not a political scientist, and that's probably where I'm going to draw the line. But I think what needs to happen is that, you know, we've had, you know, administration after administration talk about how important manufacturing is and talk about how important, technical innovation and prowess is. And then they don't really do anything about it. And, you know, we had a little bit of good news this week where the The new administration agreed to fund an offshoot. There's an IPC formed a subsidiary a couple of years ago to help, develop more, domestic manufacturing competitiveness. And the government has decided to fund that. I think they're, it's a few million dollars or whatever. I mean, it's good. It's a start, right?
Right.
You know, as I mentioned, earlier in the podcast, it could take $10 billion, even more, to build a leading edge wafer fab. And then you have to find the personnel that know how to operate it. So TSMC deciding to put a plant in Arizona is a good start, right? That was a great recruitment. We need more of that. Europe certainly needs to do similar things. And I think that, when you look at the amount of money that is being spent on all sorts of things that are, maybe debatably important to our national security, you could find $10 billion to help support your domestic investment into leading edge fabrication, much in the same way that years ago, we had, a consortium was formed to help, quote, save the North American semiconductor industry. I mean, I think you almost sort of need that kind of intervention now. The, Intel's decision to outsource some of its manufacturing, should be a concern because who fills that gap, right? If everything goes to Samsung and TSMC on the leading edge, then little by little, our technology prowess will be, will erode away. And yep, it's a good position to be in.
Man, these are big problems. Other than that, everything's great in electronics.
It is, right? It is. I mean, can we talk about some of the things that are great?
Yeah.
We have time?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Well, so, we kind of teased this at the beginning, right? Is that, I see a lot of disruptions coming. And, the reason why I'm confident about some of these, which I'll get to in a moment, is because if you just look at what's happened over the last several years, the number of new designs has been going up almost every quarter. The number of the amount of revenue that PCB ECAD companies have generated has been going up almost every quarter. The ESD Alliance, which it's an offshoot of SEMI, it tracks all the software reports, not just from the publicly traded guys, but a lot of the smaller private ones also contribute data. And that's the PCB MCM design software segment's grown 17 of the past 19 quarters.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really healthy run.
Mm-hmm. It sure
and,
is.
All teams numbers shot up, over a period of years I'm excited about this because, I think it goes well beyond just, it's not just price increases or anything like that. I think it's really being driven by lots of new companies in our industry. And these are companies that didn't exist as electronics companies 10 or 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've mentioned Tesla. Tesla, was a battery company, right? They've created this whole market and, all these electronics going into their vehicles. And it's then kind of had a ripple effect through all these other car makers.
Mm-hmm.
You have Amazon, right? Which, they wanted to put Barnes & Noble out of business. Well, now if I look around my office, I've got, there's two Kindles here. There's an Amazon Fire. I've got an Eero device. I've got those pods all over my stupid house. I mean, it's just, when did the first Kindle come out? 15 years ago, maybe not even.
Yep.
Now they're a major, major electronics player.
I'm sort of embarrassed to say that now when I download on my Kindle, it's Judy's first, second, third, fourth, fifth Kindle. I'm like, okay, which one? I think it's the fifth, but and I'm with you. I just bought a new Echo, not because my old one was bad. It just had a sexier speaker on it and some new features.
Nice.
My watch that I just had to get a new one of these. These things, as you said, did not exist not too long ago. And now we all need them.
Right. I mean, I got, when I bought, my latest Galaxy, they gave me an accompanying smartwatch. Just gave it, right? You know, so
I know.
I mean, it's just, it's nutty though, you know, how much these things have pervaded all of our lives.
Yep.
And the, it's, you know, I would consider there are a number of disruptions that are actively going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tesla broke cars. Apple, you know, broke phones, and they very well may break cars as well, because they're looking at the car as a platform for entertainment.
Yep.
You know, you have Microsoft that, you know, broke computing years ago. If you go back far enough away, you know, everything mm-hmm. was mainframe back in the day. And,
yep.
And now with, you know, app-based tablets and Chromebooks and all that, you could almost argue that the cloud is basically just mainframe all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And we've come close to full circle. But Apple's now doing, what, $5 billion a quarter just in gaming hardware.
That's crazy.
So, you know, it's, these things have exploded, and yep. there's no signs of slowing down.
Yeah, and let's just talk about gaming for a minute. Oh, my heck. That's crazy.
Yep. And again, they're coming from companies that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, weren't involved in these industries at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that the, you know, the lesson for, there's probably some lessons here for ECAD, you know, in terms of, you know, keeping an eye on what's going on and, you know, who might be, you know, trying to develop applications and things like that for getting, you know, going from schematic to, you know, actually to fabrication. And, you know, is that happening? You know, is anybody outside of the traditional big three or big four, you know, looking at doing things like that? You know, that's the, you know, for you guys to sort of keep an eye on, right? Or what I think more likely is happening is companies, you know, like Altium are trying to break all that themselves. And I mean, break in a good way.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. No, we get that. No, I mean, we talk a lot inside the, well, the digital halls now of Altium about fundamentally transforming the industry. We see that it's you know, right for the taking. It's really, really hard work, but you know, we're our CEO and our leadership team, we think we're the company to do that from a ECAD standpoint, but also have implications sort of way beyond our own area of expertise. And I love being part of that because it all hurts. You know, it's all hard. And again, like, it's really exciting to be around companies at Altium. One of my favorite things to do is to see, you know, Altium stories, these things that people are coming out with are flipping amazing, you know, autonomous underwater robots, and even just a meditation device, Core Wellness. And another company is doing literally satellite, they call it satellite gas stations in space, where they can refuel satellites. It is so fun to be around not only the consumer electronics, but such a wide smattering of how technology really impacts the world. I think you and I have a lucky seat to be in, Mike.
Oh, no question. No question.
No question. And we've also seen where it came from, which is super fun, because good Lord, we remember tape ups. It's like remembering the dinosaurs. Maybe we're becoming the dinosaurs.
I remember being taught how to scratch the film with an X-Acto knife in order to, you know, fix a short or something.
Yeah, yeah. Or intentionally make a short. I know, it's crazy times, but boy, what a time in history to live through, to see all of this. Well, Mike, I think we could go on for hours, because I know you and I both love this industry. It's exciting times, lots of really pervasive challenges ahead. But thanks so much for the work you do as, you know, at PCDNF and Circuits Assembly, and really taking a look not only in North America, but really across the globe, and keeping us all abreast of what's going so we can help plan our futures. So, Mike, I hope we get to see each other soon at PCBE East or West. And thanks so much for coming on today and giving this update.
Yeah, my pleasure, Judy. It's always great to talk with you, and I'm really happy to be a guest on your show anytime.
Yeah. And also for our listeners, Mike also has a podcast, the PCB Chat, and you can find that on the web links that I'll share below, and just lots of good resources there. So make sure you go down, check out the show notes, and please give us a subscribe. It helps us to grow and keep putting out great information and great guests like Mike Buteau. So we'll see you next time. Until then, remember to stay healthy, stay safe, and always remember to stay on track.